people who are going to start us off with about 5 minutes each, and I'll introduce them in the order that they will speak, are both from our teaching staff these past few weeks. Daryl Trimue on my left teaches Church and Society at Bright Divinity School in Fort Worth, Texas. He is a retired attorney. But I just found this out as we were talking before the discussion, before we started, that he does have one capital punishment case in his resume. And so he has some actual first-hand experience. He's not just like me who reads about everything. He's actually been there to watch it happen. Unlike him, on my right is Chuck Huff, who, like me, just reads about it. Chuck teaches social psychology at St. Olaf College, and one of his areas of research is how people think about blame. So that should be very interesting as the conversation gets rolling. Daryl is a graduate of Emory University in Atlanta, and Chuck is a graduate of Princeton University in Princeton. So, with that, and these are our guests and fellow staff members, and they can tell you who they are when they speak if they choose. Daryl.
Okay, I'm happy to be here tonight. I published not in the area of capital punishment. In fact, a person who has a lot of memories, both good and bad, about the criminal justice system in terms of my own career. We do know that capital punishment has been around a long time and in a variety of societies. Not all societies have it. The Judeo-Christian society of which we are members has had a history of capital punishment. You can see in Genesis 9, 6, whoever takes the life of a human being, their life is to be required of them, as it is written, because they are created in the image of God. So that the taking of human life, which is usually the crime associated most frequently with capital punishment, is considered from a moral point of view, besides a legal point of view, to be an extremely serious matter. And I would say that capital punishment is a serious matter for us to discuss. We see in the Hebrew Bible several particular crimes for which you could get capital punishment. And those of you who've gone to my sessions, I'll try and be brief and not be too redundant. One in the Hebrew Bible, we see that one could get capital punishment for being disrespectful to your parent, or striking a parent, or saying a word of blasphemy, or having sexual intercourse with a woman during her menstrual period, a variety of offenses that in the modern West we would not consider to be capital offenses are in fact listed as capital offenses. Nevertheless, you do see again in the Hebrew Bible that the first death in the world comes about not through natural causes, but in fact Cain kills Abel. And what do we see there? We don't see some sort of recitation that Cain's blood is required of him. Rather, the mark of Cain is placed upon him. And of course, we do know that most famous criminal who suffered capital punishment, Jesus Christ, suffered because he was wrongly accused of being an insurrectionist against the Roman state, and in fact dies a political prisoner's death on the cross. Crucifixion, which was standard in the Roman Empire. So I think to a certain extent, both Jesus' life, where he meets the woman caught in adultery, and basically does not say that adultery is a minor matter, but rather points out to her would-be executioners their fallibility, and takes a stand against the punishment of her, along with his own execution being wrongly committed, wrongly convicted, goes to, I think, the notion from a biblical point of view, from a Christian point of view, that capital punishment, whatever its viability in other societies, is inappropriate for Christians. Now, we do not live in a theocracy. We live in a country that's essentially founded by Christians. I would suggest to you that capital punishment is inappropriate for our society because of its Judeo-Christian heritage and also because of the historical legacy of violence in this country in the extermination of Native Americans and in the routine lynching of African Americans over a 350-year period. And indeed, if those of you who have come to my seminar have seen the statistics with regard to how frequently capital punishment is meted out against African Americans, Hispanics, and other non-whites. In addition, you should be aware of the fact that over one-third of the people who are executed are technically mentally retarded. That is, they have IQs of less than 70. That capital punishment is handed out primarily to poor people, and that it is extremely infrequent that wealthy and influential people suffer capital punishment, although we do know that they commit capital offenses. All of this leads me to believe that for whatever the viability of capital punishment for other societies, it is not indeed appropriate for our society, nor for the kind of Judeo-Christian Western industrialized tradition which we manifest to the world. Other Western industrial societies have outlawed capital punishment. Canada, in particular, since 1975, when they did outlaw capital punishment, has seen a decrease in the number of commissions of capital offenses. Thus, I doubt very seriously whether or not capital punishment has a deterrent effect. There has, in fact, been some investigation that shows that it may increase the commission of capital offenses. And then finally, I think it goes against the essential and most profound Christian teachings. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to talk about belief, people's belief or support for capital punishment. From a psychological standpoint, and then later tell you some of the reasons that I take the stand that I do. I try to limit myself to one piece of psychological jargon per day. I did not use one earlier today, so I'm going to use one now. The research seems to indicate that support for capital punishment is what psychologists call a symbolic attitude. There's a whole lot of things that go along with a symbolic attitude. I'd just like to list some of them for you. A symbolic attitude is an attitude that usually stands in the place of some deeper sort of fear or issue, rather than being an attitude that's based on a lot of investigation and concern about an issue. So symbolic attitudes usually are very simple in their structure. That is, they're not complex. People don't think about trading off, for instance, in capital punishment, justice for the victim versus justice for accused people. Most folks who think about capital punishment think only about justice for the victim. It's a strongly held belief, very, very emotional. You see these kinds of beliefs also work in racism, where things like zoning laws or attitudes about busing stand in for racial attitudes. And I submit that they're strongly held beliefs, partly because they're connected very much with our feelings of a loss of control of our society, and that we don't know what to do about the crime that we perceive in our society. Very often, capital punishment, belief in capital punishment is unconnected with knowledge about the kind of statistics that Daryl was just talking about. The last survey that I saw that looked at people's both knowledge of issues regarding capital punishment and people's support of it showed that about 60% of the people who are in favor of capital punishment did not know if their state allowed capital punishment. So there's a real disconnection here between these strong attitudes that people hold and knowledge about the issue. In addition, some interesting research has been done by Phoebe Ellsworth, who has asked, who has given people capital cases that have been tried, people were convicted. And as she gives them more information in these experiments, she gives them more information about these capital cases that came up in the trial but are essentially irrelevant, like the person lives in a trailer park, they like to wear these particular kinds of clothes. The more and more that person gets individuated, the less and less people are willing to sentence them to death. And it has nothing to do with the fact that they look more or less guilty because of this information. It simply has to do with the fact that they look more like a person instead of a person who ought to be this stand-in for the evil other that we ought to kill. Symbolic attitudes also end up being very flexible in terms of the rationale that people will use to support them. And I have a feeling we may find that tonight. A fascinating study that Phoebe Ellsworth did in California was a survey of folks, found out at that time that about 70% of the people in California were in favor of capital punishment. This was in the late 70s. And she then, in the survey, asked, the phone survey, asked these people what their reason was for supporting capital punishment. Almost all of them said capital punishment is a deterrent to crime. So the next question that she asked them was, if I were to convince you beyond a shadow of a doubt that capital punishment was not a deterrent, that if it was not a deterrent, would you still be in favor of capital punishment? 70% of the people said yes, they would still be in favor of capital punishment. So because it's such a strongly held belief and stands in for something else, it's also a very fragile belief, so that people are very, very much strongly committed to their opinion, but will search out anything they can find to support it. What I'd like to suggest, and this will be no surprise to most of you, is that we should think more complexly about it than simply to think about it as something we need to do to get back in control, and to ask ourselves about our own motivations for our beliefs in capital punishment. I've come to the conclusion that if I care both about justice for the victim and justice for people who are accused, that I can't be in favor of capital punishment. I think, though, that if you are going to make an argument, you can't make one based on deterrence. The research seems to be almost unequivocal, saying that there is no deterrent effect of capital punishment. So if you're going to make an argument, you're going to have to make an argument, I think, based on something like revenge. And that is, they did so-and-so, so-and-so ought to be done unto them. This is not an argument that is unheard of, even in the Old Testament. and it is an argument, by the way, that underlies a lot of our beliefs about blame.
Yeah.
You might not think that you're interested in revenge, but I can get you in a situation where I can promise you you would be. So I think if you are going to make an argument about capital punishment, it's going to have to be one based on revenge, and we might as well come out and say that's what we're interested in. So I will now be quiet.
I bet.
not bloody likely.
I since this has started this way, I'll just say that this spring, when John Wayne Gacy was executed in Illinois, I had not a bit of sorrow. And I moved to Chicago the year that he was apprehended. He killed well over a dozen young men, tortured their families, tortured the young man before he killed them in several cases. I think that the state in that case did the right thing. With that little bit from the other side, or another side, I'll ask what y'all have to say.
I too live in Illinois, and I felt a great deal of dismay over the execution of John Wayne Gacy, and was living in Illinois at the time he was apprehended, and felt horrified, you know, at that point when they kept pulling the bodies out of his house. And I mean, it was a horrific experience and a horrific crime spree over a number of years. There's just no doubt about it. But the other thing that I'm very clear on is that the man was ill, very, very ill, and that serial killers as a group are ill. I'm a pastor and I get into trouble with people. When Jeffrey Dahmer was convicted and then was not given capital punishment, this came into a Christian ed class, an adult study. It was raised in an adult study on grace, actually. A person saying very clearly that Jeffrey Dahmer did not deserve the grace of God. And I said, well, you know, whether he deserves it or not, he has it. And that, you know, that was something that was very difficult for people to see. And I think is difficult for people to see that serial killers, people who do horrific things, have the grace of God. But as far as I can tell by reading the Bible, there is no way you can cut yourself off from that. I'm also a Calvinist, and I really believe, you know, we can't do anything one way or another to get ourselves into the grace of God, which is why the grace of God is such a wonderful thing. But I really felt, you know, if you've been in a state where they've actually executed someone, and you get to watch the news reports, and you may have watched them too, Peter, they're awful. For days before, they interview people, it just dominates the news. They interview people, and people are saying, you know, there was one person who was interviewed, an on-the-street interview, that they should have taken him out and tied him down somewhere, and everyone should have been able to, who wanted to, should have been able to take toothpicks and, you know, or hammers or something, and just torture this man to death. And there were many, many people who said this kind of thing, which horrifies me, that there's that kind of violence within us, that, you know, that we're looking for an opportunity to just let somebody have it. And it was in, you know, the local news for days and days and days, before and after. You know, we interviewed all the family members, we interviewed, you know, many, many people. And I really felt, to make a bad pun, it was overkill. And why were we so fascinated with this? Why were we so fascinated with the fact that the man was going to be put to death by the state? What about it is so intriguing to us that would take our attention from very many, very important things that were happening in the world for days and days?
It was really important to me that fried chicken was his last meal.
Fried chicken.
Sure.
Which was reported over and over and over.
In all fairness to the news, though, Eric Zorn in the Chicago Tribune had a great article about what would have been suitable retribution for John Wayne Gacy. And that would have been, it was something like what you described, giving everybody a shot or a kick or a spit at him. And Eric Zorn came around to saying, but we don't live in a society of revenge, we live in a society of justice, whether you agree with him or not. And that death by lethal injection was a reasonable way to eliminate the continued expense that John Wayne Gacy made to for the state of Illinois, and the agony of his existence. And this is not to deny the revenge factor. Those families, you know, were just furious, and I would be too, and you would be too if it were your son.
There's
not necessarily.
Well, there's no doubt that if someone killed my son, you know, I would not only be furious, there would be a variety of emotions. But I think, too, I would hope that I would keep in mind what I have in mind every time a serial killer, you know, comes to life, which is that the person is ill. You know, you cannot do that. I think that's why we get so horrified, because we cannot conceive of ourselves doing such a thing.
We get so horrified because we think we can.
Amen.
I'd like to suggest that that these people may not be ill. One of the sessions that I did earlier, I explained Milgram's study where they had people shock other folks up to 450 volts. And people were horrified by this study precisely because they saw people willing to kill others. And it was not that these people were ill. They were a standard cross-section of society in New Haven, which might be a weird city. But
only if you went to Princeton.
But my bias is showing. But they were just standard folks, and it was the power of the situation that produced their willingness to go through with it. They weren't particularly happy about it. I think that we can do it. Now, I also don't want to suggest that some people who kill others might not be ill. I think it's clear that there are people who are really sick and who will do these kinds of things. But I don't want to immediately come to the conclusion that a person is ill simply because they do something really deviant like that.
Some of it, I think, is an outgrowth of frustration. The federal law for selling drugs to a minor is life imprisonment. The second offense under that federal law is death. Why does there have to be a second offense if it is life imprisonment? I think what you see is that our courts do not follow up. We do not end up stopping a serial killer like Ted Bundy, for example, who went into courts, escaped, was back killing and killing. If our judiciary system said that you commit a crime, you're going to be locked up. And we did that. We didn't plea bargain. We didn't reduce the sentences by 75% so that they no longer meant anything. What I think is happening is the frustration of the public over the fact that these people are released, go out, and they do the same thing over and over. So from the perspective of how do you stop that person, the ultimate answer is execution.
Well, I'd like to address myself to that, and perhaps we have a judge here who might address that issue also. I think what you're pointing out to is the high level of dysfunctionality in our criminal justice system. But part of the dysfunctionality in the criminal justice system is the tying up, particularly of federal courts, on appeals, particularly on capital offenses. Mm-hmm. So that what you're doing is you're pointing out a valid problem, namely that we do not handle the prosecution of crimes very well. That, although very important, and which does also explain the high level of frustration people have, still doesn't go to the question of whether or not we should have the death penalty. What you're pointing out is that we should have better prosecution of criminals. Perhaps we should have a review or perhaps an abolition of both parole and probation, and people who commit serious crimes should do some serious time. That still doesn't go to the issue, though, of capital punishment, which is still a related but different issue. Judge, would you like to comment on that? No?
I think that's a good question, though, in terms of capital punishment being seen as standing in for that frustration about all of the other issues, and standing in for an expectation that somehow the criminal justice system is supposed to solve the problem of crime.
In the front row?
Yeah, the discussion had really, I think I'm in favor of capital punishment. I don't think I used to be. And I think if I attack it as a moral and ethical question and look at it only in that context, then I don't think a lot about whether the system is working or not. And I really question whether, if I identify someone as ill, saying, well, that person therefore shouldn't be put to death, you must only put to death healthy people. Again, I'm looking at the question of whether there's a set of rules in society that says if you break these particular rules, you die. Whether you're ill or healthy, whether the system's good or bad, that's the moral and ethical question.
What about the question, the issue of people who are almost mentally incompetent, if a high percentage of them are really below the standard of what we say one needs to understand what the
If you get into that, you know, I start to think, well, look at the testing that's being done. You know, look at the statistics that are out there. You know, there was a book out a few years ago titled Lies, Damn Lies, and Statistics. You can do a lot with statistics. But get down to the nub of the question, which is, should a society do that? And I think they should. And part of it is, you know, I think back to my personal experience about a year ago, and I hate to fall back on, I watched Oprah, but about a year ago.
We all do. We just don't admit it usually.
There was a great show where battered women were on the show. Every single one of these women was under a death threat from her boyfriend, husband, whatever it was. And after the show aired, two of the women were killed. And it was a riveting show. And I began to identify with the victim and get angry with the victim. And that man, whoever it was, that kept these women in terror and then ultimately, you know, killed. And this is a very common form of death for women today. My visceral reaction was, kill the son of a... I mean, that was my immediate reaction. And I have very little sympathy for people that try to control other people's lives and ultimately take them, basically victimizing innocents, whether children or whoever it might be. And it's a visceral reaction, I admit to that.
Yeah. Is a visceral reaction a sufficient argument for a moral justification? I mean, when Ted Bundy and John Wayne Gacy got killed, I'm still against the death penalty, but on the other hand, I didn't cry. I have to admit, I felt a certain level of relief, even though I still oppose the death penalty. And I don't think that feeling of relief is inhuman or necessarily sinful. I also don't think, though, that that's and if a lot of people feel that that's a sufficient argument to justify, morally speaking, the practice of the state taking people's lives. You see what I'm saying? In terms of how you justify things morally as to whether they're right or wrong, as to whether or not they create a better common good, as to whether, for instance, they deter. For instance, those husbands or boyfriends or whatever that kill those women. We're all horrified at that. But the question is not whether or not that is bad. We all agree that's bad. The question is whether or not really the death penalty would have prevented that. And with most of these people, they're into irresistible impulse. What you have to do is when they make a terroristic threat, give them some serious time and give the women serious protection. But just saying that we're going to fry you if you do it afterwards doesn't stop most of these guys.
And so, you can't get real protection,
There's been some laws on that in terms of stalking and in terms of making terroristic threats.
We're doing better with that.
Yeah, Chuck.
Oh, I agree with you. And
And particularly since from the work that I've done, it's clear that revenge is at the bottom of a lot of our retribution, is the bottom of a lot of our understandings of what blame is about. I came to being against the death penalty thinking that it was a just thing to do if it could be done justly. Mm-hmm. That is, that if that I think there is an argument to be made that can be defended, I'm not an ethicist, that says that it is right to take a life for another life, and that the revenge is right. But given what I know about the criminal justice system from the research that I read and from what Daryl knows from what he's been in it, I don't think you can do it justly. And therefore, I think we should try something else. And that's my reasoning for being against it. I think you could make a revenge argument for it, that because it connects with these powerful emotions that we have. But I just don't think that, again, the problem is if we're only going to think on this one dimension, which is, kill him. Gosh, such a horrible thing happened to the victim. Then it's possible to sustain a strong support for capital punishment. But I think that if you want to think about people who are unjustly accused also, and there are folks who are unjustly accused, I mean, there's lots of proofs of that. We're going to have to come up with a system that doesn't do it, that does not use that punishment, because it is an irrevocable one. That's my take on it.
I know that there's at least one Canadian in this bunch. What's the debate like up in Canada? What was the debate like up in Canada? Do you remember that? Yeah, I'm looking at you.
Oh, at the time that it was changed?
Yeah.
I wasn't there.
You weren't there yet?
No. Okay. Sorry.
That's yeah. One dead end. You're next. Lisa, what's the deal in Australia?
Well, actually, at the moment, they don't really have the death penalty at all. There's debates about bringing it in and everything, but they're firmly against it, so it really doesn't exist at all.
Even in a former penal colony.
Pardon me?
even in a former penal colony, they don't have the death penalty.
South Africa's just abolished it.
That leaves.
How recently?
By a president, well, April 27th, by a president who served 25 years in jail.
Okay.
So that leaves then the United States and what, Russia with it? We know.
I think China has it.
I'm worried that we might be shaming people into silence who have a different opinion.
You know, you said you had statistics to prove that you could, death penalty is not a deterrent. How many of the people who put to death have committed another crime?
Yeah.
How can you prove this? How can you make a study about that?
Well, you know, they didn't commit another crime, obviously, because they were dead. That the deterrence goes to stopping other people, not the ones who committed it.
Well, it does work as a specific deterrent.
My guillotine separates your head from your body. You don't do a whole lot after that.
My advisor, William and Mary, used to call that one trial aversive conditioning.
Behind Cindy, there was a comment or a question. That, yes, you and the wife. Yes.
Recently, in the state of Washington, a man by the name of Charles Campbell was murdered, or executed because of some horrible crimes he did. And the family he murdered, they were living in fear that if he ever escaped, he would come after them. And he had, yes. I don't know, are you familiar with that? He had raped a woman and was sent to prison and said that when he got out, he was going to kill these people that had testified against him. So they put him on work release about 10 miles from where they lived. And didn't tell them. And so he murdered the mother, the 8-year-old daughter, and the neighbor woman 12 years ago. And I was very happy when he was executed.
That turned Washington State pretty much as pro-capital punishment.
And yes. it took 12 years from that conviction through the appeals process.
Yes.
So how many millions of dollars that the state spent on legal fees alone?
I have no idea. It should have been done years ago. There's a lot of anger over that, the whole thing, the way the courts have, or the prisons have handled
it. Do you want to say something about the anger?
There ought to be anger over it. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be anger.
I agree with you on that.
We ought to be pissed off as all hell. And lots of folks should lose jobs if they did something stupid like that. If not other parts of their body. That's just, I find it ludicrous. My wife works with rape victims and battered women. And she comes home to me every day with horrible stories about these kinds of folks. My response, though, is do we let our anger at this incident make us decide that we can set aside issues of justice for other people who were killed? This guy probably ought to be killed, but can we set up a capital punishment system that only kills the ones that ought to? and I'm not sure we can. So I'm sort of a reluctant supporter of, or a reluctant opponent of capital punishment, because I think there are some folks that probably ought to be killed. But I don't think that we, because systems are fallible, I don't think we can set one up that will only kill those who are. And the stakes are so high that I think we need to be very careful.
Did you say the mistakes are so high, or the stakes
are so high? The stakes are so high.
Up here in the balcony.
I feel my anger toward the judicial system and the network of lawyers we have today. And what are we going to do about that? Why can't the consequence be a little closer to the act? I mean, I think that's a big...
Yeah, see, I wish people would direct their anger at those kinds of things instead of at these sort of pipe dreams of capital punishment. To me, capital punishment really becomes a pipe dream because it's not going to have the kind of effect that people think it will have.
Charles, you said, I think, that it doesn't work and that there's no criterion you could use to decide if it was effective. Would you concur that a person who has been killed, been charged of the crime, sentenced, and then released and kills again, is therefore demonstrating to society the only way to stop that person is capital punishment?
I am in general against rules in the judicial system that give judges no discretion, because I think judges need discretion in order to be able to take account for things like a person who kills a second time and is mentally retarded.
So, you know, I oppose you there. I'm for lack of discretion on judges, because discretion has always been used, essentially, have African Americans suffer capital punishment, particularly where the victim was white, and for whites who killed African Americans to get much lesser punishment. On the other hand, I think the only case that sounds reasonable to me is where you have somebody who has been convicted of a capital crime and kills a prison guard. At that point, I'm not sure I'm a purist anymore. And the reason why being that how in the world can I really say that people generally should be locked up for life when the life inmate knows that if he gets a chance and he kills a guard and makes a break for it, people like me are just going to have him locked up for life again. You see what I'm saying? So that might be my one exception to it, because I don't think I can really, I don't think a system of life without parole may be able to be effectuated without there being perhaps something on the tail end. But that might be, and I waver on that. I'm willing to hear arguments contrary to that, but that doesn't seem to me to be irrational, because that doesn't really go towards, that does go to, towards deterrent, but deterrence on a much more direct fashion. In other words, you have somebody locked up, and they're going to stay locked up, and if they kill somebody trying to not be locked up, you see what I'm saying? That's a little bit different. One thing I want to talk about, and then I'd like to shut up, but the frustration people have regarding the appellate process. And the thing is we could have a much more simpler appellate process, which would, of course, cost the state much less, and would also get rid of these long periods between when somebody's arrested, particularly when they're a serial killer or some other real freakish type killer, and the time they're executed. The problem is you can't, if you do that, you have to do that across the board, including a lot of people who are innocent. And if you just say, well, they get one appeal, and then within a 3-year period they have to be executed, you're going to start executing a lot of innocent people, because mistakes are made.
Cynthia?
I'd like for any of the three of you to comment on the effects of the correctional system, the correctional system as we have it today, and the violence that's inherent in that life for repeat offenders, if you will, people who, you know, were convicted of murder or rape or whatever, and go out once they're released, you know, how much ever time they've served of their original sentence, and recidivism. Because I've read quite a bit about the violence that is inherent in being in the correctional system, in prison. Has either of you?
I'm not a penologist. I do know we don't do well, though, with rehabilitating people. And in fact,
punishing people.
Well, we punish them. I don't know how well we do at rehabilitating them. I do know that there is a difference. I mean, some people will commit a violent act that takes a person's life. You know, a spouse comes home or is surprised by sudden infidelity, perhaps people in the act, and kills the other spouse. That person, even if they're locked up, will not necessarily come out and be Richard Speck and become a serial killer. On the other hand, well, that's as far as I'll go on that. It seems to me that what our prison system does in terms of violence, I mean, there's a lot of gangs in prison. With the drug scene, there's a culture of violence in prison. Nevertheless, I don't want some of these people running around. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I'm against capital punishment. It's because I'm for people who commit serious crime doing some very long and hard time. If they're not rehabilitated, if they have life without parole, I can live with that. You should be aware, though, that since we're talking about costs, it took Florida $57 million to execute 18 people. And that in general in the United States, it costs about 6 times to execute a person as it does to house them for a 40-year sentence. So that if you're going to go to cost-benefit analysis, it's probably better to lock them up 40 years.
If you want justice.
Yeah, I'm just talking about housing. I didn't get into the question of justice.
Well, no, I mean, it would be possible, of course, simply to kill everyone who's accused.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And
that's
that would be cheap.
True.
Don't call that cat sort of mouth.
That's right.
That's his point.
One of the questions I have, perhaps for Daryl or for our judge, is what do we do with the anger that we feel? I mean, I think it is neither good politics nor good psychology to tell people who are outraged over a crime that they hear simply to sit on it and say, well, gee, life is hard. We can't do something with that anger. And I'd like to know if there are constructive ways to use the anger that people feel over these, rather than simply to jump for the death penalty.
While you think about that, I want to ask a question that Cynthia's comment raised for me. How many of us belong to congregations that have active prison ministries? I see one hand in the room.
I saw three.
Three. Okay. Thanks.
Four.
Judge or Daryl, do you want to deal with that question about anger before I continue on my list here?
He's not speaking, so I'll take a stab at it. I think what people really want is a kind of public, sure, and swift punishment for serious crime. What really I think enrages people is when a crime is committed, is blown up in the newspapers, and then the victim is forgotten, and or the criminal somehow shuffles off to a little bit of time and then gets arrested. And people are particularly outraged when somebody commits a really serious crime and you find out that they murdered someone previously. And here, 4 or 5 years later, they're back and they killed someone else. That is what I think, if I read the sentiments of people, is what outrages people. And that's why I think I'm not opposed to long sentences, depending upon, again, what type of homicide it is. You know, you can have anything from something like involuntary manslaughter on one end to first-degree murder, malice aforethought, premeditated, and cold blood on the other. And I think that there has to be, and there has traditionally in our Anglo-American law, there has been a recognition of the degrees of seriousness, terribleness, and I think terrible crimes have to be punished swiftly and publicly, and that's one of the things we're not doing. And I think that's part of the drive behind capital punishment.
And part of my, I'm a member of Amnesty International, but I'm not particularly happy with the way they run their campaign against the death penalty. And the reason is precisely because of the question I have, which is they're mostly interested in saying it's unjust, don't do it, but they're not saying what to do instead of it.
Yeah.
They're just saying, don't do that.
Bruce has been waiting again for a while, and then Sue, and then here you
go. I'm unequivocally opposed to the death penalty under any circumstances. I have no doubt, whatever, that I could be provoked to commit acts of violence against someone, given proper circumstances, possibly to kill someone, but to...
I promise to wipe down the shower next time.
To institutionalize this in what I would hope would be a civilized society, I think is inappropriate. I think that the question was asked earlier, what do we do about the anger that people feel? Well, what capital punishment is doing is saying an appropriate response to your anger and violence is to go out and commit alternative violence and kill someone. And we have conservative politicians such as George Bush standing up and saying exactly that. I think that's very detrimental to society. I think it fosters further violence within society. That is not the basis for my opposition to this, but I think that is a powerful argument to oppose capital punishment.
Sue?
I wanted to talk about the issue that you brought up there on the public. There's been talk in previous years and recently about televising, you know, executions. And I guess Donnie, you tried to be able to cover an execution, have that televised. And I just think it's an interesting thing to think about, and when, what people on both sides, what that would do to people, you know, whether it would, you know, for people who, well, whether, I guess it doesn't matter how they would feel about it now, but if they saw that televised, would they think, oh my God, that's so barbaric, we shouldn't be doing this, this is awful, because it's personalizing it. I mean, right now, we say, oh, sure, kill a guy, you know?
Yeah.
You don't see it, you don't know, I mean, you read it in the papers and you get the coverage, but you don't see it. So seeing it may cause a different effect, or my fear would be that people would rally around and go, cool, let's go watch, you know?
Yeah. Like, you do remember that we used to hang people in the public square, and in France that they did use the guillotine, and that was, that was a big
spectacle.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like pornography. I mean, when you, you know, our society permits pornography, and the question is, does that encourage healthy sexual relations, or does that encourage sick sexual relations? And I would be worried if you televised executions. I mean, maybe you could get at it, you're the social psychologist. I would be too worried, though, that maybe for a period of time it would be so repugnant people would outlaw the death penalty. But no one Americans. I'm too frightened that people get a taste for it. You know, and say, I'm even afraid you might get like the killer John Lennon, somebody thinking, gee, this might be my 5 minutes in the limelight.
Right.
I may be televised nationally. Let me go kill somebody.
And yet, it's a responsibility of those of us who vote for the death penalty, in a sense, okay, sit and watch it. Do you really believe in this? Sit and watch it. You know, I don't know. It's interesting.
And then after
you. I feel like I'm sort of in the hot seat here, but he did work in prison for a couple of years. And I don't know if you wanted to comment about that.
Or... Well, just one thing. We talk about the issue of rehabilitation. When I worked in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, we were taught that that's no longer the mission of the Federal Bureau of Prisons. The mission is security.
Yeah, I've heard that.
So, rehabilitation is no longer an issue. It doesn't work. It won't work. So don't even waste your time even talking about it.
Mm-hmm. And your job is to be alive when your shift is over.
Oh, well, yeah, sure.
Ed.
You know, we're looking at capital punishment, and we're talking, in a sense, about cruel and unusual punishment. And that argument has been used. In the state of Washington, one of two states which still allows hanging, after the Campbell execution, the next man in line, his attorney said, my client weighs 300 pounds.
Four.
If you hang him, he might lose his head, and that's cruel and unusual punishment. That logic was used. Now let's go back a little further. How many of you supported caning when that happened in Singapore? Is that cruel and unusual? Would it be a deterrent?
Well, I mean, you're talking about caning for Singapore society. Do I want caning here? It's one thing to ask me, do I want caning here? Or am I willing to, for Singaporeans or other people to cane people who commit crimes in their society? And those are a little bit different questions.
Except when that question was asked and surveys taken, it appeared that the American public that was surveyed was more strongly in favor of caning in this country, which was surprising.
Yeah, the question I have with all polls, and this comes from me being a lawyer and an ethicist, is morality based upon popularity, or do we have to have morality based on other kinds of principles? Because, I mean, there's a lot of things we could do and would do if we simply polled people, took a consensus, and everybody agreed. I mean, part of the reason why this is a good country is we have 10 amendments. We have certain kinds of immunities from state action, no matter what the populace may feel.
Yes, Your Honor.
Earlier, query was, how do you respond to the anger of victims?
Well, what do people who are angry about the crime and their society, say that, you know, this particular killing that we were talking about earlier, what can we constructively do with that anger? So my problem is I find it very hard, given the kind of stuff I'm asked to support my politicians for, to have a thing to do with my anger that I can feel, yes, I'm voting for a package or some person, or I'm giving my money to some organization that is going to help solve this problem, rather than just, am I making any sense? There was a verb in my sentence, I know. Well,
maybe the community in which we find ourselves at this particular day, what do we say? Well, what would Jesus say about it? Or how would Jesus respond to somebody's anger? How would he respond?
Don't ask me.
Well, I think with the woman at the the woman accused of adultery, I mean, that's how he responded.
That's an example of a capital punishment case, a capital case.
I find that response inadequate.
Well, let me answer what he's saying. The question of the community is a central question. We're talking now, and we have been talking almost entirely, as if our community is the United States of America. That's, first of all, I'm not sure the United States of America is a community, because it destroys too many people, and it leaves too many people marginalized to be a community. A community looks out for all its members. As Christians, we have a different community, governed by different leaders, by different standards, that's supposed to be about looking out for all its members. You might be interested to know that John Wayne Gacy was a member of the Christian community, a practicing Catholic in prison, I don't believe before that. Jeffrey Dahmer had a conversion experience. Somebody had the moxie to go to him and tell him about the love of God.
And he became a Christian. I guess it's from my congregation.
Now, we can talk a lot about what ought to be done on prudential grounds or something in the United States of America, but what has been left entirely out of it is what we Christians are called to do and what this community does. This gentleman here had what he described as a visceral reaction of anger and a wish for vengeance on a killer. But that's not visceral at all. You were trained to think that way, to feel that way. People are trained to feel. Feelings are not somehow innocent. They're not automatic. We are trained to feel and react with violence. And crime is part of that cycle of violence and of feelings. Capital punishment is another part of it. The whole system that depends upon violence, both the system of crime and the system of the state to deal with it, feed those feelings in us. They teach us that those feelings are right and visceral. As Christians, however, we're not supposed to be in that system. That's what the New Testament refers to as the cosmos, the world. But we're not in that system. We've got a different system going. And there are, I mean, this has happened to nonviolent Christians, that they've been murdered and so on. There are some cases, like in Pennsylvania, I think, or Ohio, of Amish folks who are murdered. And that was not their visceral reaction. And they worked very hard to have those murderers not executed.
The Amish community.
Right, right.
Yeah, good point. We're almost out of time, and I just want to make sure that if somebody's been kind of holding back, waiting to get the last word in, or the word in.
Richard, is it?
Yeah, sure. As an outsider, it's quite fascinating listening to the arguments for the capital punishment. I would, however, like to stress the constitutional rights, the politics that's involved here, coming from a country that really doesn't have a constitution. If people want the state to execute people, that they believe that is right, then that is democracy. That is society. That is a reflection of society. And that is a reflection of society that you live in.